Everyone, and welcome to the penultimate episode of this shortened season. We are on episode 46 of season 9 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final two terrible Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4.0, or Live Free and Die Hard, and Die Hard 5, A Good Day to Die Hard. I'm Rob. And I want to welcome back my perennial penultimate guest, Agent Palmer, who
hello,
who for some reason was also willing to watch another 5 minutes of this movie. I guess he can be, you know, happy that he just had to read what was going on over these 5 minutes as opposed to having to literally watch anything happening on the screen.
Okay, so. This was the first time I had ever watched this film. It was perennially on my to-watch list. But I will say, in a change from other things, and discounting my appearance for Live Free and Die Hard, where we actually had like things happen on screen, I usually get the credits. And this time,
yeah, but you usually get 1 minute. You just get 1 minute of the credits. This time you get 5.
Yeah. Well, but I also get a beautiful sunrise.
Right. Yes, you do. That you do.
And so over Chernobyl, which I was trying to place myself in this. This was before the this was well before the pandemic, which means it was well before everybody got into that Chernobyl docuseries.
That's right.
So I just kept thinking, like, why are we showing this? Like, this is a very long, like, not to get into the 5 minutes real quick, but like that we are watching this sunrise for like 15 seconds that I'm just like, when are we fading to black?
That's right.
And I thought that while I was watching the film, not when I was watching the 5 minutes, just like, why?
Maybe it's because they want to tell you that Chernobyl glows, even with the pixie dust that they've been spreading around it, you know, trying to, you know, they've dissipated all the radioactivity, but okay, here we have, you know, Chernobyl still glowing, you know, in 2013, it's only been 25 years since, you know, since this is the real Chernobyl. So I don't know.
It was very odd, but I'm,
yes, I agree with that. Yeah. Okay. So, episode 46 begins with a long sunrise shot, which I actually do have written on my on my notes, and ends with picture mill producer. All right. Again, maybe we'll talk about that. Who knows? There's a lot of crazy things in this in these credits.
Yeah, there are.
You know, which you know, you have to really know Hungarian to understand most of it. You know, I think that's what it comes down to. Okay, so you've already admitted to everybody that this was your first foray into watching this movie.
Yeah.
So what's your general impression? And feel free to be as brutally honest as you want, because, you know, we've just been trashing the movie for the last 45 episodes.
So I want to say, it's a very weird watch now, because it's a post Skyfall world. This is the first real, like, this is the first and last Die Hard, but in a post Skyfall world where, you know, Skyfall kind of changed.
Where James Bond, where M is dead. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying, like, Skyfall was a poster child as this is the turning point in all spy type films. And I don't know if it's because John McClane Jr. Jack is a CIA agent that they went this way. But like, I kept getting very like, are we trying to be James Bond, or are we trying to be Jason Bourne, or are we trying to be MI? Like, what are we trying to do? Like, in the first 30 minutes of this film are two epic car chase scenes that I'm like, What are am I in a different franchise? Did I jump franchises? Did I fall asleep and wake up in a different world? Like, what is happening? And it felt like he was trying to do too many things. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I think the last 45 minutes is a great Die Hard film, but the first hour is kind of like, what is happening?
Wait a second. You honestly are saying that going to Chernobyl and, you know, having them drive 24 hours from Moscow to Chernobyl and having to cross borders to be able to catch Yuri and Irina, who got there by helicopter, you know, which there's no reason why. You're saying that is a good Die Hard plot?
How is that any different than we're just going to drive to Woodlawn? Like, everybody else has planes and, like, you know, express. We're just going to steal a car and go drive to Woodlawn.
I'm not saying four is good either.
Look,
I was waiting for you to try and bring the example from one, two, or three, but there you can't.
No, look, all I'm saying is that as a popcorn flick, the last 45 minutes when it became a Die Hard film was kind of fun. The first, you know, hour when it was trying to be a little bit of everything else, I was like, I don't know what's happening. Like, okay. I do, but like, I don't.
Were you able to figure out that Yuri's the bad guy?
I was waiting for a twist. That was the twist, was kind of a little disappointing, if I'm honest.
Well, it's a twist that happens like 10 minutes before the movie's over. Yeah.
Yeah. I was waiting for something to happen. But I was really hoping it would be something, I don't know, more shocking. Like, that was not it wasn't like a crazy reveal. It was just kind of like, okay, great. Yeah, all right. Like, I mean, honestly, you probably talked about this in the last 5 minutes, right? Like, does trouble ever go looking for you? I ask myself that all the time. Like,
that's right.
That might be the best way to end this franchise.
It might be a very good quote. Yes, but it's a good way to end the franchise when you're expecting to do something more from it. You know, I don't know if that's like the best way to say, okay, this is the last we will hear of John McClane, by him saying that. I don't know.
I will say,
it's better than him saying I'm on vacation. He said that many freaking times in this movie. And, you know, again, every time, and I've mentioned this numerous times, throughout this entire season, whenever I hear that line, I think of Billy Crystal in City Slickers. And that's it. And that's funny. And this is just stupid.
I mean, I do think that they missed their calling as McClane and Sons Demolition. I mean, I think that's definitely what they should be doing. Okay. Maybe not so much police work, but, you know, demolition, you know, they could bring down a house or a neighborhood in about 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah, probably. That makes sense. They can do it. And they have multiple ways of doing it too.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. There was, I have to say, it was fun. I mean, and I guess that was all I'm looking for. It wasn't, it's not great cinema, right? But it was fun. Like, if you
I think you're my
grab
first
some popcorn,
guest who's actually enjoyed the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't. Okay. But maybe the fact of the matter is, am I the first person to watch it the first time? Right. Like,
no, there are other people that hadn't watched it either.
Cause I just wonder, like, I don't know what the rewatchability of this is. It's fun for one go. Like, the first time, it's kind of fun. I don't know that I will ever, I will put on 1, 2, 3, and 4 again. I don't know that I'm ever putting 5 on again.
Yes.
Unless it's like we're watching all 5. Let's just do a marathon. Maybe then.
No, I'm not even. I'm a completionist, and I am like, I don't know.
I will say the weirdest thing about this entire film to me is that it never felt like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where for most of the film they're trying to get you to think he's gonna pass the baton on.
Well, hello, they did that in 4 and they're doing that here.
It didn't. It never felt like that to me. It never felt. It felt like he's got his own thing. It never felt like they were trying to pass off the franchise to another.
They're definitely trying to pass it off. They were trying to pass it off to Jai Courtney. Come on. Even though at the end he says, "I'm John McClane." You know, it's like, you know, that's completely blatant the way that they're saying that.
And as we're sitting here, you know, 12 years from release, nothing. Right?
That's
think we've had. Have we even heard rumbling? Have there even been rumblings, Rob?
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. But that's because the movie sucks. That's what it comes down to.
Well, the whole principle of all the others was it was a cop, even if he was in the wrong place or just whatever, like it was. I think this is not a movie franchise you can take on the road. I think that's maybe the biggest. If you take this exact plot and put it like at Three Mile Island in the middle of Pittsburgh, in the middle of Pennsylvania, maybe it still kind of resonates better. But you cannot take this on the road.
No.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. And again, it doesn't make sense. You know, the idea of John being the fish out of water fits in the first movies, but at this point it's like this is too much. Too fish. He's too much of a fish out of water here.
Well, let's start at the very beginning. The guy gets the file that was clearly a CIA plant for Russian people that are doing deep background on Junior. and whoever he's falling for the same plant that the Russians are supposed to, like, that's John McClane's better than this. That's what we're supposed to believe.
Apparently.
Okay.
I don't know.
All I know is that, that sunrise at the end was too long. You know,
well, come on, this is the director's cut, so you know, maybe it's just a little bit longer than it was in the original cut. I don't know.
Okay.
We have the debate up as to whether the name of the director lingers longer in the director's cut than in the regular cut. You know, we have suspicions about that.
Okay.
Talking an extra few seconds, but still, you know.
I mean, you know,
something there.
I mean, it's, you know, everybody argues about points and billing. So maybe somebody was like, I just want 5 seconds. You only get three. I want five. So the director's cut.
Well, bottom line is, I don't think John Moore became a household name after directing Die Hard 5.
So. I don't know that anybody's become a household name after directing number 5 of anything.
I don't know.
You're either already a household name by the time you do 5.
Okay, so you're saying like George Lucas, so he's already a household name by that point. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I can buy that.
You don't step in and do number 5. They're like, we'll just pick somebody off the line and they can do 5. It's fine.
Yeah. Again, I you know, we've talked about this. I nothing against John Moore, but what the hell? that's more or less what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, again, I'm sure he's a very talented director. He was just given a really, really bad script. And had to somehow deal with it.
Yeah, that's kind of why I point out the two car chases. Because it's like, we're just killing time.
Right.
We didn't need two of them. Yeah, maybe, you know, but we didn't need two of them. Although I do like the idea that if they had proposed a 6, we'd go back to his wife. Because we worked our way through the family again.
Well, again, one of the things I've pointed out many times is that everyone in his family, you know, at some point decided that their name is now going to be Gennaro instead of McClane. And then John saves them. And then, hey, surprise, surprise. They now say, now I'm a McClane.
for a week. And then John's going to like forget a lunch date and it's going to be Gennaro again. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? I mean, even what you were talking about, the file that he was reading, you know, the Russian file on the plane, that actually says Jack Gennaro on there. So.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely don't believe in nepotism.
No. But oh well, that's just the way that they do these things, you know.
Yeah.
And I want to point out that you know, you missed out by not getting to talk about the theatrical version of this, because the theatrical version has an entire scene after the sunrise shot.
Really?
Yes. We see John and Jack return to America and are greeted by Lucy at like a private airport or something like that. You know, so whatever. It's really, really cheesy. It's very weird. They're all like smiling. It's like, now we're a big happy family, but they got rid of the whole thing. But it's something like 2 minutes long before it just, you know, they do a freeze frame, you know, like good 70s and 80s TV shows did.
I don't think I missed anything.
No, you didn't miss it at all. But I'm saying, no, but you were talking about the fact that you don't get to talk about, you know, people on screen. So, you know, here you missed the minute and a half of Lucy, John, and Jack, you know, just laughing in slow motion, because they're just like music in the background, and we don't get to even, we see them inaudibly talking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's
whatever. It's, you know, they come back on a private plane, you know, to who knows what airport this is supposed to be with the whole thing. And she's just standing there waiting for them, and they come off the plane, and she runs to them, and they run to her, and they start laughing and cheering, and, you know, and reminiscing about all the fun they had in Russia, I guess. And then they freeze frame it. So yeah, I'm glad they got rid of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's... They should have played like you know, let it snow. Maybe then it would have worked a little better, but they don't. You know, just you know, typical McLean hugs. I'm so glad to have you back from Russia. You know, so, yeah.
If we're staying with the character, there's no chance he told anyone, except whoever his boss is, that he was going to Russia.
Probably. Well, John found him in Russia, so he knew he was in Russia.
No. I'm saying John.
Oh, okay.
There's no chance he's like, hey, Lucy, I'm going to Russia.
No. He doesn't. Because again, Lucy doesn't appear at all in the director's cut that we've been watching. She appears twice on screen. In the theatrical cut, at the beginning and at the end, she's the one who drops John off at the airport, and then we have this scene at the end that she's in.
Yeah, that sounds like something that we shot in post.
And anything is possible, but you know, and then she has when he's in the middle of the car chase, she calls him and he's talking to her. You know, she's like, "Oh, have you seen Jack yet?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm looking at him right now," as the car is like spinning past him and stuff like
that. Oh.
Yeah. You know, again, I'm glad that they cut that out. That just was far too over the top for this crazy movie. But whatever.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And now we get the credits beginning, and the music starts playing, and we get the Rolling Stones song "Doom and Gloom."
Which
actually plays for almost for the entire time that we're going to be talking over these 5 minutes. It's pretty.
Yeah, it's weird because so I want to say a couple years ago, I went through and I listened to a bunch of artists all the way through, and the Rolling Stones was one of them. And I was like, I don't recognize this song. I'm like, what is going on? Like, why would I would recognize, like, even the deep cuts? I still kind of recognize. And this was legitimately one of the new songs featured on a greatest hits compilation.
Okay. Yeah,
that they like created Yeah, that they created to sell the album is like, yeah, here's 12 songs you know and two that you don't.
Yeah, Billy Joel did the same thing. On every one of his greatest hits albums. but again, it's Billy Joel, so you know, anything he does is good. From that perspective, I've heard every single Billy Joel song on all of his albums, and I can't say there's any that I say, oh, I can't believe this is a Billy Joel song. It's like, they're not bad songs. They might not be great songs, but he doesn't have any bad ones.
Yeah. But, yeah. Whatever. And so I think, considering we went from, Creedence in 4, to the Stones in 5, you know, that's some decent music.
Yeah. Well, they have to give, you know, the viewer something to enjoy. So you might as well enjoy a little bit about the music as it's playing out.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the Norm, I've done this enough with you and credits that I was actively looking for, like, what in these credits is exciting or interesting? And I'm sure you talked about it when it happened on screen during those 5 minutes, but I was extremely impressed that in the credits, like, I don't know, 2 minutes in, I'm like reading. I'm like, the MI-26 helicopter was named Miss Belarus.
Yes.
And it had a crew of 11.
That's right.
It had a crew of 11, but we're supposed to believe that only two people could fly this.
Well, of course, it's Irina. You know, how could you expect anyone else?
Yeah, I was just like, I stopped it and counted. I was like, oh, how many people?
And some of them are, and two of them are like instructors.
Yeah, you know? I'm not. I was like, I get like, is it that complicated or is it that old?
Exactly.
And looked, and I was actually, I guess there was a part of me that thought, like, well, all that stuff's in. And look, towards the end of the credits, we get through like 15 different VFX departments.
Yeah.
But I guess they, you know, had the helicopter on site for a few things, and yeah. You know, I like the idea that it was named.
Yes. Yes, we didn't point that out before because it wasn't. It didn't come up, you know, in the conversations in the episodes that we were talking about the helicopter. But I'm glad you brought that up because it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it.
But before we even get to the helicopter, let's start with, okay, so the credits start rolling. You know, they give us the standard stuff at the beginning, the unit producer, and then certain characters based on created by Roderick Thorpe, and then we get the
cast. Yeah, I forgot. I made a note of that because I don't remember seeing that in other credits.
Yeah, they
like certain,
they always say they have to. They have to credit Roderick Thorpe because he, and the irony is that in Nothing Lasts Forever, the character's name is not John McClane. So that's even the his name is Joe Leland. So it's like,
so was he credited? Did I just miss him being credited, or was he credited in different places in the other one?
I believe he was credited in different places in the other ones because I don't think you ever had the beginning of a credit because it was only, you only got 1 minute of a credit right before the very end.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. You know, so
weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can go back and look if you really want to, if you're really that interested, you can go back and look, but I'm pretty sure in every single one of the movies, it does list Roger Thorpe. You know,
I guess as long as the archetype is there, it doesn't really matter if the name's not, maybe.
No, but maybe some of the other, well, you see, I don't know if he mentioned his, no, he wouldn't have mentioned his kids, because in the book, Nothing Lasts Forever, John is, or Joe is going to visit his daughter, not his wife. And his daughter's name, I think, is if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, but I think her name is Stephanie. But she doesn't have a happy ending at the end of the book, so you know we're not going to make connections there for you.
Fair,
stay away,
fair.
Stay away from that. Yeah. And so I'm trying to think of what character carries over. That's the thing, because none of the, he's the only one that carries over.
Because
they wouldn't have mentioned that he has, a son named John McClane, or maybe someone was Gennaro. Maybe they're talking about the Gennaro. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to think even what comes. I mean, if Lucy's in the theatrical version, she carries over from 4 to 5, right? Yeah. And obviously, we see the two kids in the first one.
Yes, and we know that they're Lucy and John, and we know their names are Lucy and John Jr. But again, that's not what's in the book. Okay, now if you look at IMDb for every one of the Die Hard movies, it says Roderick Thorpe, certain original characters by. Okay, now what's this could be a typo, but for Live Free or Die Hard, it says certain original character by. It's singular, not multiple characters. So I don't know. Die Hard with a Vengeance is multiple. Die Hard 2, it says certain original characters by Roderick Thorpe. And then in the original Die Hard, it just says based on the novel by. So I don't know. I'm trying to think. I guess maybe once they credited him the first time, for the character of John McClane / Joe Leland, then forever John McClane now becomes property of Roderick Thorpe.
I mean, I guess the next time I watch James Bond, I'm going to have to see. I mean, it's based on, I think they're all based on Ian Fleming because Bond's never changed.
Right.
And
it's the same name also. It's not like here where the name is different.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I don't know. Right. So we then go through the cast and we start going through the cast of characters. And, the fourth person listed in the cast is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Lucy, who is not in this version of the movie. In the beginning credits, they did cut her out, but in the end credits, they left her in. Maybe that was part of her contract. That if you cut me from the movie, I still got to be, listed in the credits.
That's one of the other reasons it feels like something in post. Somebody went, hey, did you guys tie this to 4? And they're like, well, John McClane's in it. And they're like, that's not enough.
No, but it's the exact opposite though, because they cut her out of the director's cut.
She's in but as long as it's in the theatrical, more people watch the theatrical probably.
In this case, I believe I would say that you were wrong about that, because not many people went to go see it in the theater. So anyone who wants to watch it now pretty much can only find the director's cut.
Okay.
From my understanding is it's very difficult to find copies of the theatrical. I found one, but it's not easy to find. It was not easy to find it.
I watched what you shared with me because you told me there were two versions and I was really scared about watching the wrong one.
Yeah, you'd say, hey, wait a second, but Lucy's in this? What are you talking about? Of course she's here.
Well, she's got a great agent, all right? If at the end credits in the director's cut that she's not in, she still gets...
Well, my assumption is she got paid regardless. It doesn't matter if she's listed in the credits or not.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's what I would say. And there are a hell of a lot of characters in this movie, and most of them get killed off within 2 seconds.
I'm surprised how many... Like, that was the one shocking thing going through this list. How many henchmen got names?
That's right. Seriously. And then we end up getting a list of all these people who did stunts in this movie.
Did
you by any chance count how many stunt people are in this movie?
No, but I'm going to guess it was four columns or three columns? Three. It was three columns. Okay. Okay, so it's three columns. I'm going to guess easily over 100.
Nope, there were 83 stuntmen.
It seems small, but okay, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of stunts.
Yes.
I mean, everybody jumping out, everybody whose car got hit on during all the car chases, everybody who jumped out of the way when the cars went flying. Like, even before we get to the actual other stuff, that whole courtroom scene, I'm guessing everybody, although I'm sure you talked about it, but that courtroom emptied out has an amazing emergency evacuation plan.
Yeah, of course.
Because it went from full to empty in like no time.
Bombs can do that. What can I tell you? Yeah. And then, you know, we're really going to go quickly through these credits because there really isn't much to talk about in the whole credits. But I found some interesting things along the way. They have, first you have the Russian dialogue and dialect coach. Okay. And then following that, you have the dialect coaches for Jai Courtney. He has two dialect coaches. Now, I mean, he speaks a little bit of Russian, but not very much. And then you have the dialect coach for Sebastian Koch. Yuri, I guess, you know, he needed help with his Russian, or maybe he needed help with his English, or maybe Jai Courtney needs help with his English. Yeah, they never made it clear.
No, but I feel like I guess you're trying to make it as authentic as possible, but like. We're going back in time, making the Russians the bad guys again. So,
right.
Like, okay. Why not?
I, from what I see, Sebastian Koch, I believe, is a German actor playing a Russian here. You know, so I guess he does need a little bit of help with his Russian.
I guess he would be.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, as you mentioned before, when we're going through these credits, there's tons and tons of special effects companies that are listed here. A lot of the credits mention, you know, that part of the Hungarian team. So I guess most of this movie was filmed in Hungary, which also makes sense because they want to give the look of Moscow and things like that. One of the other things that jumped out at me is they have something about voice casting.
Yeah. But
where do they have voice casting unless it's all the people who are screaming as the cars go by?
Or, I mean, all I kept thinking is normally, isn't that like at the very end of the end credits of like additional, like if there's you know, if it was dubbed in other languages, but
yeah, but they have voice casting and then additional voices. There are 22 people listed as additional voices. So again, yeah. I have absolutely no idea where that really.
I mean, there was some radio stuff.
Not so... enough that you're gonna have 22 people on there. Do you think people are gonna be able to differentiate between the voices? You know, you get someone who knows how to do a whole bunch of voices and, let it go through. I don't know.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's a lot of credits to this film. And, you know, again, outside of the people who die, there's like four characters.
That's right. Exactly. And the final credits for this whole 5-minute segment is first of all they have the main and end titles, and they also have the end crawl is done by a company named Scarlet Letters, which I think is a very clever name for a
it is an amazingly clever name. Yeah.
You know, if only they did it in red. You know, it's all black and white, so that sort of defeats the purpose, but still.
Yeah.
You can't have everything.
And there's also a film lab credited, and I just kept thinking, like, were we still doing film in 2013? We hadn't done completely digital? Is that what I'm led to believe, that there's a film credit? A film lab credit?
I guess there must be. You
know, no. I don't know. There's a part of me that just believes, like, we hit the year 2000, and we basically phased out film except for like Wes Anderson.
Apparently not. Yeah. Or maybe like you said, it's something that was written in the guy's contract, so you got to give him time to on the screen for that. I don't know.
That's
my only thing. And then so the company that did the main and end titles is called Picture Mill, and the last credit that we get to see here is the Picture Mill producer. So it's a man named David Midgen, who is the executive producer of this company, Picture Mill, who did who does the main and end titles. You know, that's more or less what it comes down to. So, and he has 279 movie credits. Sorry, he has 284 credits and additional crew as the main titles producer.
Yeah. Okay.
So, hey, good for him. You know, to be.
I mean,
to
he'd be great. He'd be. Wouldn't he be great for Six Degrees? Like,
oh, for sure. That's true. That's true.
Although everybody is going to be like, who?
That's right. Okay, so Bruce Willis worked on A Good Day to Die Hard with David Midgen, who worked with so-and-so. And then you're like, who the hell is David Midgen? Yeah. But hey, we're still talking about him.
So, that's true. That's true.
You gotta give him credit for that. He got us to talk about him. And again, the song, you know, by the Rolling Stones, Doom and Gloom, goes through these entire 5 minutes. So that's
also pretty. It's weird because the credits, not just for the ones you and I have talked about, but in general, even when they do a pop song at the end, they don't always let it run. Sometimes it's like a verse, a chorus, a verse, a chorus, like half a song, and then we get into the score, so we don't have to pay for as much of it.
That's right.
I think this was just, we're trying to sell more greatest hits albums. Please play our song.
Maybe. Do you know what year that song came out?
I think it was 2012. I think it was the year before.
Okay. So that makes sense.
So, yeah. And it was, you know, a greatest hits album, right, which the Stones have like 15 of those. So it's like, oh, another one?
Well, they keep, you know, they keep churning out their greatest hits. Why not?
Why not?
Exactly. So I don't have anything else that I want to say about the credits here.
No, I mean, I called out the Miss Belarus, which is the MI-26. There was another helicopter crew for the MI-24, which I found. I looked up pictures of both, and I couldn't tell the difference between them. So I don't quite know which one was which.
Maybe we could rent this one for this time and rent this one for that time, and that's it. We use both.
They're relatively similar, but that I will say when the helicopter first appeared, I went, we're gonna do this again. I'm glad we didn't exactly do the same thing, but he did kind of bring down the helicopter with a car.
That's right. No, that was in the fourth. Oh,
yeah,
sort of,
I know.
He did it here too. Okay.
Yeah.
No, well, he didn't bring down the helicopter. He disabled the helicopter in some ways with the truck in this one. But it's Irina who destroyed it by deciding that, hey, I have nothing to live for after my father's dead. So, you know, he's been in prison for 5 years, but hey, you know, now that he's out and now that he's dead, all right, I don't need to live anymore. So I'm going to just, you know, I'm just going to crash the helicopter and that'll be it. Yeah, I don't know. But thinking about it, it's very interesting that every single one of the Die Hard movies has a helicopter in it. You know, the first one has the helicopter with the FBI guys and it blows up. The second one has a helicopter when Grant shows up with his men. And there's also the helicopter at the very end, the news helicopter that John uses to get onto the wing of the plane. And then in the third one, the helicopter in Die Hard with a Vengeance, the helicopter is what they use when they get to Quebec.
Yep.
Don't believe there's any other helicopters before that.
I don't think there is.
And then Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, we have the helicopter that is taken out by the car that, you know, that he shoots as a missile. And then there's the helicopter that Mai uses that John steals and lands on Warlock's lawn with. You know, Warlock woke up the following morning with a with a brand new helicopter, or with a helicopter that broke the fence, just sitting on his lawn. And then here, so we have these two. All right, interesting. Okay, so we're pretty much finished talking about everything here. It's got a little more tomorrow, and that'll be it. But you owe me something because when you were on at the mid-season penultimate episode, you avoided giving me your top fives for both the top and Franchise Fever. So I'm gonna have to ask you to you gotta pay up. You gotta, you gotta tell me them. So we'll start with Top Cop.
Okay, so Top Cop. This was the easy one for me. Five, Frank Bullitt. Four,
the
was
new
Veronica
one or the
Mars.
Old one?
The old one, of course.
I'm kidding.
Four was Veronica Mars, which obviously I got lucky that she made that movie, otherwise wouldn't have counted.
That makes sense.
Three, Eddie Valiant. Two would be John McClane and one would be Axel Foley. That's my five.
Okay. That's a very good list.
And franchises was hard. And I know we talked about this a little bit beforehand. I think, Star Trek, Star Wars, Middle Earth, and Marvel and DC are like, I look at them as fandoms. They're like beyond franchise. I don't see them as franchises anymore.
Okay.
I just don't. So I kind of went, and actually, at least one of them on my list is getting close to moving that, to jumping that shark. I didn't count TV movies. Otherwise Harry Palmer would have made it as well, but two of them are TV movies and I didn't want to count TV movies.
And I'm glad that you didn't count them because they don't count.
Okay. All right. So, I'm going to say, thanks to a friend of mine for talking me through this. I'm going to say what?
I said, thanks, Ed.
It wasn't Ed, but I'm going to say the Sean Connery Bonds. I think Bond is another one that kind of jumped beyond franchise, but if I just take the Sean Connery Bonds, that's a franchise. So that's five. And then Ghostbusters would be my four. Beverly Hills Cop is my three. I really like Axel Foley. I feel like.
Did you like?
I did like the new one, but I don't want it. But I want that to be it, though. Like, I don't know. No one else can do that. Maybe there's an actor out there, but like, I don't think anybody else can do that. That's his. And then, my top two, I'm going to go with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as two. And then my top one, which I feel like is getting very close, dangerously close to graduating into that other tier beyond franchise, is Jurassic Park / World. And I think they're one more like television series away from becoming something bigger than a franchise.
Right. My problem with Jurassic Park is that, it's been
93.
Okay. It's been 32 years since it came out. And I think it's still just, still trying to find its place. Trying its place as a franchise. That's what I'm talking about.
So I would argue. If I was waiting for you to make me choose, and I would say Jurassic World is the better franchise. And I only say that because, Steph and I started watching the Camp Cretaceous series, which has two or three seasons, which takes place between the first Jurassic World movie and the second Jurassic World movie. And then they did an additional follow-up series called Chaos Theory, which we haven't finished the second season of and apparently has been renewed for a third. And it is that kind of series stuff that I think they found their footing there more than they have on the big screen.
I have not seen any of those TV shows. None of them.
Yeah, I they're animated. They're the Camp Cretaceous is kind of for like younger kids. The Chaos Theory is for kind of like older kids. But I feel like if you enjoy the original Jurassic Park stuff and you were just so-so on the Jurassic World stuff, this is what you wanted. Like in a weird way, this is kind of what should have been. We're just using kids and misfortune as the way to go. But they're that kind of fleshed out the series in a way that, you know, makes it like almost a really better franchise for the small screen in a weird way.
Okay.
Yeah. On the blog, I think I wrote about the first one. I've not written about any of the other ones because I don't want to spoil stuff. But like, as things go, as a half hour or 23 minute, you know, palate cleanser for your day, it's kind of fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I will have to try to find time to take a look at those things.
I think they're all on Netflix if anybody's interested. Okay. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we've gotten those two done. Now we will play the daily game of State Your Motto. And the state that you will get today is Kansas. All right. So your three choices of the state motto of Kansas is A, let weapons yield to the toga. B, while I breathe, I hope. Or C, to the stars through difficulties.
Feel like it's B. I want to go with B, but I love A. I love A. I hope you made A up. I hope A is not real for a different state.
I did not make up any of these. These are all real state mottos.
Okay. I love A. A is my favorite, but A feels like it's Washington and it belongs like we did Animal House here. So, you know, whatever. I want to say B. I don't know why, but I want to say B.
Okay, and the answer is C. Okay, because the Latin term for to the stars through difficulties is ad astra. Again, I have no idea.
Well, what does that have to do with Kansas?
That's what I was going
to
say. I have no idea what the connection is to Kansas. No clue.
I mean, it's flat. You can see more of the sky there.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. All right. So I was going to give you another 6 degrees of Bruce Willis entries, but I decided, and anyone who's been listening for the last few days already knows, that for my returning guests, I've been much nicer to them, that they don't have to go through that agony. You know, it was bad enough that they had to go through 5 minutes of the movie, let alone have to try to connect actors to Bruce Willis on the spot. So instead, okay, I decided to make up a bunch of Die Hard trivia questions from any of the five Die Hard movies, and I will randomly choose each of these questions, and we're going to see how well Palmer knows his Die Hards. All right, so I am going to spin the wheel, and we will see what question comes out.
Okay.
And this is from, Die Hard 1. All right. What is Dwayne Robinson's middle initial?
I feel like it's a T, but I don't think it is. I want to say T, but I think I'm wrong. I mean, everybody goes with J, right? Like, everybody goes with J, but I don't think it's a J. I think that's a comedy thing. So I'm going to go with T,
and
even though I'm probably wrong.
And you are correct. It is Dwayne T. Robinson.
Wow. All right.
There you go.
Holy moly.
You see, you got to go with your gut with these things.
Yeah.
All right. Let us spin the wheel again and see what the next question is that you're going to get.
Oh, boy.
All right. You get one from Die Hard 5.
Okay. Oh, great. I just watched it. Let's see how much I was paying attention.
That's right. Who directed Die Hard 5?
Moore, right?
Yes.
I can't think of his first name anymore, but Moore.
Very good. John Moore. John Moore. You see, I gave you answers to the trivia question as we were talking without knowing that that was going to be your trivia question.
That's all predicated on me remembering.
Okay. But you did, so that's good. All right. Let us spin the wheel again to see what the next one will be for you. Which movie will it come from? Okay. From Die Hard 2.
Okay.
What is the plane code for the plane that's bringing Esperanza to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, I have no idea. Oh man. Like, I feel like it, I think what it's like, let's take a wild stab here. Like E, I feel like it's an E, 276 maybe. I don't know.
It's FM1, Foreign Military One.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The pilot uses it, you know, that, and it's mentioned a few times, you know, that's Esperanza's plane. It's FM1.
I feel like I haven't watched it since I watched it to be on the show. It's been a...
It's only been, what, five seasons? Four seasons? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Something like that. All right, let's spin the wheel again and see what your next question will be. You know, so far you got 2 out of 3. It's pretty good. So you're doing well. Doing well. And you get another Die Hard 5 movie, question.
Oh, good.
What famous song does the cab driver sing before giving John a pass on paying for his ride?
Oh, New York, New York?
Yes, very good. You see, it's a good thing you had that fresh in your mind, right?
Yeah. I was just going to say something Sinatra.
Okay. All right, and now we will spin the wheel for the final time for you, and we will see what your final question will be. And there's nothing left from Die Hard 5, so you don't have to worry about that.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, this is an interesting one. It's from the original Die Hard. What famous person does Hans state also owns a John Phillips suit, just like Takagi?
Arafat.
Excellent. Very good. You see, 4 out of 5, I'm very, very impressed. Nice.
Yeah, me
done.
Too.
Nicely done.
Yeah, that's I was just hoping to hit over 500, so.
And there you go.
Pretty good.
You're a baseball person, so you might know this. Have you, you know, my favorite baseball quote in a movie is from a movie called The Martian Child with John Cusack. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Okay. It's not a great movie. It's better than A Good Day to Die Hard. There's no question about that. But the quote in the movie is, he goes, "You know what's really cool about baseball? You know what I love about baseball? Baseball is the only sport where you can fail 70% of the time and still be great. It's about trying hard and never, ever, ever giving up. Just think about it. If you get a hit 3 out of every 10 times you're at bat, you're really good. If you do a little better than that, just a little bit better than that, maybe 3.2, 3.3 times, you're great. And you can be a star. And you're going to make it to the big show. And if you do that on the big show, you're a superstar."
Yeah. If you only fail 6 out of 10 times, you are a Hall of Famer.
That's right.
And so it's just kind of like, yeah, that's what it's all about. That's, and look, I still watch a lot of baseball, and it drives me nuts that you can now fail 7 out of 10 times and be a Hall of Famer.
That's right.
We've already raised how many times you can fail and still be the best of all time.
That's right. But if you do a little bit of enhancement and performers, then you're never going to get it.
That's true. Or yeah, well, you know, as long as you don't bet on it either.
That's true.
But we're allowed to take bet ad word, but we're allowed to advertise.
That, of course.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Why not? Okay, so all in all, you know, how would you rank the Die Hard movies?
I think I probably go 1, 3, 4, 2, 5.
Okay. All right. And how would you rank the Die Hard villains?
Ooh. 1, everybody else. I mean, genuinely speaking, I think that they, like, as far as the villains go, maybe it goes 1, 4, and then everybody else.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't put
Thomas Gabriel that high up there. He has more potential. Thomas Gabriel has more potential than is realized with his character. That's the problem.
I just like the fact that I think 1 is I don't know that many people are going to say there's a better villain. He makes top 10 villain lists, compared, like, up there with everybody else, like Sauron and Voldemort. Like, you're not going to get him as anything less than 1 within the franchise.
Right.
But I think Gabriel may have the most, even if it's unrealized, he may have the most fleshed out reasons for doing what he does.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Sure. I don't know. I mean, because everyone else is in it just for the money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so is Hans, but like, he did it with such style that it rises above. Yeah. Then he does it with, you know, it's fine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, the rest seems so forgettable. It's almost like the henchmen are more interesting.
True.
So, yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. So would you like to, once again, this season, for the second time, which is rare for you to be able to get two appearances on the same season, tell everyone where they can find Agent Palmer.
Yeah. I write about movies and books and anything else that strikes my fancy on agentpalmer.com. And of course, as Rob has been a guest before, I talk to people bi-weekly release every on thepalmerfiles.com. You can probably listen where you're listening now.
Right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moveyouroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moveyourobminute@moveyourob.net. So, Palmer, once again, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for watching a movie that you've never seen.
Thank you for having me.
And I look forward to seeing you again 105 episodes from now without announcing yet what season 10 will be. But, you know, I will see you 105 episodes from now, and you will have the distinct honor at that point of being on the 1200th episode of this show.
Wow. I can't wait. It's going to be wonderful.
So we will party when it comes to that 105th episode from now.
Absolutely. 100%.
Excellent. All right. So I will be back tomorrow for the season finale. And then I'll be back again on Monday when we start season 10. But until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one. No. Oh.